This is Etta Dale Hornsteiner from LiveLiving.org. Today we have with us a special guest, Rabbi Gabriel Moreno Bryas. He is the Senior Rabbi at Congregation Beth HaMashiach here in Atlanta, Georgia. Welcome, Rabbi Gabriel.
Shalom.
Today we'll be speaking on kosher for health. And Rabbi Gabriel, this is, I think, a very somewhat sensitive subject for Christians in terms of when it comes to food and especially the word laws, anything to do with dietary laws. That seems to evoke interesting feelings within us, because when it comes to food, it's always an interesting topic to deal with. And your response in terms of speaking to others about kosher?
Well, we generally treat kosher, one, for a Jewish person, the Bible never removed the requirements for keeping kosher for a Jewish person. So in that context, we feel the kosher laws are still in effect. For a person that's not Jewish, a Gentile believer or a Christian, what we see there is a little bit more of an opportunity for them to participate, but not necessarily a requirement.
So it's one of choice for Christians. Is that what you're saying, referring to?
I believe that's correct. In the case of Acts chapter 15, it specifically lays out the decision of the Jerusalem Council, and we would call it the Jerusalem Beit Din, and that is the representatives of the Messiah that were given the authority to make binding rulings for all believers. In that meeting, of course, we know Shaul, or Rabbi Paul, presented the case for Gentiles and what rules they were required to follow to be part of the body of Messiah. In the context there were only four specific commandments given. That's not all of them, but the ones that were given were: you should not eat blood, you should not eat things strangled, you should not fornicate, and you should not worship idols. Of course, that doesn't negate other commandments like you shouldn't commit adultery, you should not steal, and you shouldn't murder. But this council was fundamental in understanding the requirements of believers today. One of the saddest chapters, I guess, we have in our history is that today most believers don't realize those are actually binding, and that specifically is on all believers. So modern practices where people consume blood or parts of animals, etc., is still strictly forbidden, as are items like fornication, which is would be a totally different subject we won't go into.
Mm-hmm. Well, I found that even though this is a matter of choice for us as Bible-believing Christians, from my research, I was pretty amazed at what I found. These laws were given by God, proving to be very relevant for our lives in terms of protecting our health. I discovered some amazing things, especially when the most recent report came out from the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, that there has been a number of foodborne illnesses or illness outbreaks recently, and these outbreaks are increasing. And I began to think, did God know something about food and about the consumption and the way we prepare it that, we're now learning, or that science is now revealing?
I think you've hit a key point, and this is where our brothers and sisters that are not Jewish have an opportunity to not only honor God's commandments, but also help their own physical and spiritual well-being. In the case of food, in modern society, we generally don't know where our food comes from. We don't know how it's prepared. And since we eat so many prepackaged items, for instance, just a simple can of soup, most people don't have any idea what's really in that can of soup. And oftentimes, even reading the list of ingredients is not that incredibly helpful, because the industry's developed buzzwords for milk, et cetera, that may not actually come out and say milk. It may say whey, or it may say some type of protein that comes from milk. Now, why is that a big deal? Now, in my case, my wife happens to be very allergic to milk. And by us keeping dairy and meat separate, because we're kosher, she does not have to worry on any kosher product that if it's labeled not dairy, it will always be not dairy. We've also seen a lot of cases where how we prepare our food. For instance, we know that a lot of people like rare steaks. A lot of people like rare hamburgers. Now, in the case of steak, generally, meat that's not thoroughly cooked, if it's a solid piece like a steak, doesn't carry as much danger as something like hamburger. Anytime you have a grinding process, which has a large amount of surface area, you introduce bacteria. In the case of something as simple as a hamburger, by consuming that when there's still undercooked parts in there, we have real issues about whether it's healthy. For instance, you know there's been cases of salmonella, E. coli, et cetera, that have actually killed people by consuming just regular hamburgers. In Europe, they recently had a major scandal where they found out people were putting horse meat in place of beef. And you say, well, what's the big deal? Well, first of all, I think most American believers aren't that comfortable eating horse anyway. But secondly, in the case of a Jewish person who's keeping dietary kosher, or kashrut as we say in Hebrew, that is actually forbidden. So when we buy meats, we always only buy from a kosher supplier. Usually in our case, it's butchers we know personally. We have one here in Atlanta that we have a long-standing relationship with, and I know that what we're going to get from him is quality and safe. Even in items like vegetables, we know we've had some major outbreaks. In the case, I believe last year, they had the spinach panic, where somehow E. coli had gotten into the spinach crop, and that was distributed in packaged spinach, and people were eating it, getting sick, and in some cases, or even some deaths. So knowing where your food supply is coming from, how it's prepared, and how you, in turn, handle it and prepare it in your home are all key steps in health for any type of food, whether you keep kosher or not. The advantage of kosher is the inspection process for kosher is 20 times more stringent than the U.S. Department of Agriculture. If you know much about the U.S. Department of Agriculture, you know that they basically rely on self-policing. And you have large meatpacking facilities that are producing tons and tons of material every day for consumption by the public. We also know there's cases, and it's not been very long ago, that we heard in the news where they were using animals that are not even able to walk into the slaughterhouse, using them, transporting them with bulldozers and front end lifters, et cetera, so they can actually still process the animal. Now, obviously, none of us would want to eat a sick source of meat, but that's exactly what's happening in our food chain. Under Jewish law, that's all strictly forbidden. And recently, about 2 years ago, a Jewish packing plant was caught mistreating the animals and were shut down completely by the rabbis. It's that extreme of an inspection process. Also, extra care is made on how the animal is killed. It's done in an extremely humane manner with minimal pain. There's no stunning of the animal by a blow to the head. Now, that's important because the brain we know of an animal is where you have a lot of the toxins that you get mad cow disease from, etc. And when they use a stunning process, it drives those toxins into the blood. Another key consideration with kosher, which you don't have in normal slaughterhouses, is a kosher animal must be completely bled out. And that goes to the point of how you actually kill the animal. So in a non-kosher meat packing plant, they stun the animal. They then, you know, prepare it, and they don't take any efforts to drain the blood out. That blood is the source of where the body eliminates waste. So if you don't force the blood out of the animal, then all those toxins in that blood is staying in the meat, Now, I remember before I became fully kosher going to the grocery store, and I won't mention the chain's name, but they had whole tip roasts. And it was one that you could have the butcher cut up for you into steaks or whatever you'd like. And I remember that 15, 18-pound piece of meat being in a plastic bag surrounded, literally immersed in the animal's blood. So if you think about that, all that is still in the meat. There's even many cases where if you get a piece of meat like a lamb leg or something like that and you were to actually cut it up yourself, you would find it still has the veins and nerves in the meat, which means if you're consuming those veins, you're obviously getting a full dose of those blood-borne toxins. We also know there's parasites in the blood, right? So those are the type of things that if you choose a kosher diet, it not only honors God's command that we not consume blood, which is incumbent even on non-Jews, but also it's got the health benefit of all that being removed. Right. So in a kosher butcher, not only is the animal killed humanely, all the blood is drained out by the animal's own heart, okay, and then when the meat is prepared, it's prepared under the strictest conditions. And special steps are taken that include soaking the piece of meat in water for 30 minutes, then you have to take it out of the water, and you cover it with kosher salt. Now, I know a lot of people listening may use kosher salt to cook in. I know Alton Brown on the cooking channel always talks about kosher salt. Well, it's become popular for flavor, but its real intent is actually because it's coarse. It drains blood. It leaches it out of the meat. And then you soak the piece of meat again. And what that does is that removes all blood possible. Then the meat's packaged and sent to the kosher distribution points where strict steps all along the process are followed to ensure that that never receives any type of contamination. For instance, it can't even travel in the same truck as dairy products. So you have no chance of any kind of cross-contamination. And then when you get it in the home, you further follow special preparation steps that make sure that what you're eating is healthy, free of blood, free of any contaminants, and you generally tend to cook your meat more well done. Now, some people may have heard of glatt kosher. That is what, if you're traveling on an airplane and order a kosher meal, you're generally going to get a glatt kosher meal. And I don't want to go into the technicalities of it because there are specific reasons it's labeled glatt, but you'll notice that that meat's almost always cooked more towards medium well to well done. And that's quite intentional, to make sure there's no raw blood anywhere in the meat. Beyond that, there's even steps on how you consume the meat and in what steps you consume the meat. For instance, you cannot eat meat and dairy together. Now, that's a little odd one, and it's actually an inferred command where God instructs us not to boil a calf in its mother's milk or boil a kid in its mother's milk. And from that, it's inferred that we should not eat them together. Now, originally, that was a pagan ritual, as was drinking blood and several other things that are forbidden by the Acts Council. And the idea was to require that those that are children of the light, children of God, have no shadow in them, no inner relationships or participation in any type of idolatrous practices. It even goes to the point where you're not allowed, and Paul or Rabbi Shaul actually talks about it, you're not allowed to eat meat or food that's offered to an idol. He goes on to say if you go to the marketplace and you don't know, then you can buy the meat in good conscience and consume it. But if you know, you're forbidden to eat it. Now, in our modern society, you say, well, that's not a problem. Nobody's offering this stuff to idols. Well, that may be true, but I know we've gone to restaurants before where they served vegetarian or even fish-based products, and they would have a small Buddha there, and they would actually be taking food out of their preparation and placing it before the Buddha as a symbolic offering. Needless to say, I cannot eat in those places because they are offering the same food we're eating to idols, which, as Paul says, is strictly forbidden. So there's a lot more to kosher than in just what you eat. It includes how you eat it.
Right. And I'm listening. There are several things that are occurring to me as I've listened to you. And I'm amazed at the amount of details, the amount of care that is required or was required by God to have the food properly prepared for his people to eat it. And I'm thinking to myself, wow, it just seemed a bit excessive. But then some questions occur, and I begin to wonder, was it also significant in terms of the body being regarded as the temple and the importance of it being the temple? I know health definitely was an issue to prevent diseases and so forth. These were, you know, back in the Bible, biblical times, nomadic individual, people traveling. But, you know, I tend to wonder how important, perhaps, did God regard the body in terms of what enters into it? Can you just speak a little on that?
Yeah, that's actually a wide open one, so I'm going to take advantage of it. First of all, kosher is about health, but that's not its primary goal. Kosher is more about the spirit than it is about the physical. And in our conversations in the past, Eddie, you know that's my big, if you will, hot button, is I'm always looking for the spiritual angle.
Right.
God commands all those that belong to him to be children of the light, okay? And those that don't are considered children of the darkness. Children of the light are required to be separate, to be set apart. You know, the Messiah actually talks about being set apart. Paul actually talks about being set apart. And the modern church word that's used there is sanctification. We're supposed to be made holy. Well, holy, people think that means good. It doesn't. It means separate, distinct, apart. So when we as believers participate in any action that is unwholesome to God and makes us not separate, then we are losing our distinctiveness, which God has specifically wanted us to be. He wants us to be different. Kosher is probably the ultimate in being different. It requires some discipline, there's no question. But what it really does is it honors in your body the concept of you being the temple of God. Now, in Judaism, in Messianic Judaism, one of the keys that each of us are created in God's image. And each of us has a divine spark within us. And that divine spark is the part that connects us to God. If you will, you could think of it as being the spirit, okay? A believer has a spirit within them, which makes them separate to God. It makes them a repository of a part of God, if you will. And because we're a repository of a part of God through his spirit and through the fact that we're created in his image, then we have, I believe, a responsibility to live this separate and holy life. Now, that obviously touches all aspects of our lives, but since the subject here is kosher, we'll limit it to that. So in the case of kosher, first of all, we talked about Acts and the four commandments that you can't eat blood, you can't eat things strangled, etc. And by the way, most poultry is not drained of blood at all, and many of them are actually strangled. So we're actually, if we're eating that, we're actually violating the commandment of God for all believers and not just Jews. But in the case of the spiritual aspect, if we're to be separate and then we go consume what everybody else does, is it honoring the temple of God, meaning our bodies that now hold a part of God in them? So, for instance, if we eat something improper, are we now bringing uncleanness into the temple of God? Now, the whole idea of kosher is actually, if you will, an extension of the idea of a temple. And we know the temple that existed in Jerusalem, and it's very interesting because modern Catholic cathedrals actually follow many of those practices. But if you were to look at the concept of a holy place, a temple, or if it helps you to think of it as a cathedral, and when you go in there, if you're worshiping, you probably would dress in nice clothes. You probably would take a shower before you go. You probably would brush your teeth. You would make sure you didn't have mud on your feet or any kind of contamination on your shoes as you walked into that holy place. And I think we all can envision that. We certainly wouldn't go in to a temple or a cathedral or a church with, you know, our shoes covered in mud, in clothes we've been working out in the garden in, okay, and then go sit and worship. So it's likewise our body. Our body, being the temple of God, is now on the inside, that building we were just talking about, if you will, the same spiritual state. So would we take mud into a temple? No. Would we take mud, if you will, into our body? Well, that's a question each person needs to ask themselves seriously. One thing I find is most people today don't spend a lot of time on their faith. They don't spend a lot of time on what they believe. And unfortunately, most people don't spend a lot of time studying. They generally are going to recite whatever they've been taught, whatever the pastor said from the front. And I'm having to translate from Hebrew to English. This is killing me. Okay, so the idea is, you know, because we're good, I'd be using terms like Bema and all this other stuff, which nobody understands. So if you got a lectern and your pastor's up there, okay, you know, you're going to listen to him hopefully and incorporate it in your life. But if that's all you're doing, you're putting 1 or 2 hours of godliness, okay, up against 40 hours at work and who knows how many other hours in the world. So what's going to be our natural tendency is to go with what we do more. So we need to make sure that we are preparing our minds as a spiritual receptor for God, and I believe as an extension of that, our bodies. So if we're feeding both our soul, our spirit, and our bodies in a healthy way, then it can't but help us draw closer to God. And ultimately, as believers, we're commanded, and this is for all believers, this isn't something made up from the Old Testament, but we're commanded to be made in the image of Messiah, to be like Messiah. You know, Messiah would not do unclean things. Messiah would not take unclean things into his body. Messiah would not let out unclean things from his body. I'm thinking here in particular actions, thoughts, or words. So it's a two-way street. We're supposed to keep this temple clean by our actions, by our words, by our deeds, and I think we can naturally extend that to what we take into our body. Now, some people get confused. They say, well, didn't Messiah say it's not what goes into your body that matters, but what comes out of it? Well, he did say that. But if you read that passage in its context, it's actually talking about washing your hands. It has nothing to do with food whatsoever. The subject was the religious leaders of the time, the strictest sect called the Pharisees. They were challenging not the Messiah himself, but Messiah's disciples, saying, but Rabbi, they are eating with unclean hands. And that's where he makes the statement about it's not what goes into your mouth that defiles it, but what comes out. He was not talking about food, etc. He never would have drank blood. He never would have eaten unkosher foods. He would do what was proper. And likewise, we should make sure what comes out of our mouth and our thoughts and our deeds is proper. But the extension is, do we want to then ensure what goes in is clean? Not only for health, but also for our spiritual health.
As you know, your one of the advices for life living, and our message is reconnecting body, mind, and spirit to God. And for so often, you know, we focus a lot simply on the spiritual and not really especially think about the body, the physical, that part of us. And to think the way you are thinking about kosher, to me, that's a paradigm shift, because personally, as I prepared for this, you know, I've always taken it, you know, for granted somewhat. Okay, kosher's over there, and here's the organic. You know, I live healthy. I eat, try to eat good food and proper food. But when I began to look into this a little bit more, this being kosher a little bit more, I'm really amazed added, and it's particularly when I began to see the tie-in to what's happening to our foods now with oil spills, when we occur oil spills, and then you have, you know, the fish, the wildlife being contaminated, and the way, you know, we're treating the animals with antibiotics and so forth. And yes, you know, we eat organic food, but I'm thinking also, God, what about God's message? Are we weighing, how much weight do we give to what God has to say about food versus what they're saying about food, you know, and in terms of organic food and so forth? Because as Christians, if we are going to follow and obey the Word of God and look at the Bible in its entirety, not just in part or just in the New Testament, but look at it in whole, then it's so important for us to consider, you know, the information, the instructions that God did give to the Israelites. I think for a lot of us Bible-believing Christians, it's going to take a paradigm shift. It's a journey for a lot of us. It's not, you know, some of us are still trying to just eat the right food and just to be healthy. And so to think of kosher and living, you know, this way is certainly going to be a paradigm shift for us.
I agree. It's something that you don't want to beat yourself up about as you're making this journey. In our synagogue, we have Jewish people, but we also have people that we refer to as God-fearers, and they're basically church-going folks that believe in the Messiah, that have adopted this lifestyle, and they believe it draws them closer to God. And we applaud that, but that's not for everybody, obviously. But for those, we constantly tell them that, one, we're not the refrigerator police. We're not coming by their house to see if their refrigerator's got something unkosher in it. Also, you need to go slow. A person that does it all at once, big buying, there's actually an excellent book out there called Kosher in 30 Days, and even there, I think 30 days is probably very optimistic. A person chooses to start this journey, then they need to do it in set steps and not beat themselves up if they are, you know, for some reason regress a little bit or take a step back. There's going to be cases where, like so many parts of our spiritual journey, that it's going to be two steps forward, one step back, two steps forward. But notice you're always going forward, and that's the key. And I think that's part of all of our lives. One of the things that I respect so much about Judaism and Messianic Judaism is the fact that whereas generally the church focuses, of course, on the New Testament, and a lot of denominations actually don't even read out of the Old Testament, but it is spiritualized. Everything is done from a spiritual perspective. Well, in Judaism and Messianic Judaism, it is not only spiritual, but we act out in the physical, the spiritual aspects. And this is done to reinforce in our lives what God's doing inside of us. And I tend to find that the physical aspect backing up the spiritual aspect actually makes the spiritual much stronger. You know, because a lot of people say, well, you know, I try to be spiritual, but I can't always do it. Well, if you surround yourself with a way of living, and it is a way of living, it's a total, as you said, paradigm shift, but if you surround yourself with it, then it makes the whole journey not harder, but easier. Because what happens as you are conforming yourself into the image of Messiah and actually doing what he did and saying what he said, you know, he can go so far as to say, you know, do these things and you'll even do the miracles I did. So you've got a real idea of not only thinking something or believing something, but instead you are immersing yourself. And, you know, if you're going to learn a language, the best way to learn a language is immersion. If you're just practicing, you know, once a week, you're not going to learn something. But on the other hand, if you were to move to that country and try to learn and learn the language there, you would learn much, much faster because you would be forced to use what you're doing constantly. And I think the same thing is true of walking with God. If we make a decision that we are citizens of the kingdom of God, then as citizens of the kingdom of God, we then start acting like the kingdom of God, then what we find is our journey towards God is accelerated, it's more deep, it's more real. I think a lot of parents would agree that trying to teach their children the reality of God and teach them that he's more than a, you know, grandfather sitting on a throne that pats you on the head and says that's okay, that if you instead see him as the king of the universe, a real power, a real source of life, then it changes your perspective of how you want to live. And you want to live more and more like he wants us to live. And, of course, he gave us the perfect example in his Messiah. You know, the Messiah showed us how to live, showed us what it means to act properly, treat others properly, to love others as we love ourselves, which is a hard thing to do. But as we take these steps to be conformed to the image of the Messiah, to be more like him, it makes us more aware. It makes us more separate. And to use our favorite Sunday term, it sanctifies us. It helps us on that road towards sanctification. It speeds it up.
Exactly. Yes, and it's definitely, I agree that it definitely helps us to live holistically when we do look at it in that way. And it's not just one aspect of our life we're looking at, but we're living a whole life, you know, when we do focus on the physical, the mental, and the spiritual, and living healthily, you know, in all those ways. And Rabbi Gavriel, I want to thank you so much for doing this interview for us. I want to also let our live living listeners know, too, remind them that you have written an article for us, and it is Kosher for Health, Part 1. Rabbi Gavriel will be doing a series of articles this year on kosher. And so if any of you want to continue learning more about it, and like we have said, it is a journey. It's not something you can jump into. It's a paradigm shift. And with God's help, Holy Spirit leading us, we can definitely become the image of Christ that he wants us to be. And I want to leave a quote, which I thought was very fitting, and it is by Molly Wisenberg from A Homemade Life, Stories and Recipes from My Kitchen Table. And it says, food is never just food. It's also a way of getting at something, who we are, who we have been, and who we want to be. Rabbi Gavriel, thank you so much for joining us today here at LifeLiving.org.
Blessings.